the hell?
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. As we're recording this, it's Wednesday, January 22nd, 2014, just after 3 UTC. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, hello.
Oh, you know, I actually have my headphones this time, so I should put them on.
Well, that's good. So I guess that if you're really
I usually keep them off in case, like, you know, when Alex isn't here so he can hear you too, but, you know.
So hey, I was just telling on. Sam that I went and I clicked through, I never click through Facebook ads. Okay, all right.
Except when you do.
Most of them are just stupid, all right? And actually, I clicked on one because it looks stupid, and I'm like, what the hell could this be about? Well, here, you go to the page, and on the left, you have FilipinoCupid.com. Okay, all right, on the left. Then you've got Buy Russian Bride. Okay, buy. I mean, not buy a Russian bride. B-U-Y. Buy a Russian bride.
Yeah, okay? Yeah.
Russian marriage. I'm like, what the hell? It's... Oh gosh, Facebook ads are terrible. I mean, Jesus.
I think they just know you perfectly.
I guess so. You know, it's, you know, they've got, let's see, I look at the list, right, and I got Westin Hotels, I've got Baby Gear at Nordstrom, okay, I guess that makes sense, Louis Vuitton, yeah, okay, alright, but, actually, most of the stuff now kind of makes sense, but that one was just, love it. I love it.
So meanwhile, I look at my Facebook, and the one thing that stands out to me right away is a post that someone I know in New Jersey just made. Because, of course, they're having the big snowstorm there.
Yeah, it's coming down big.
So here is their post. And I will just say it is from a Rebecca H. I will not give the last name since I've not talked to and gotten permission.
Right.
One snow day today, and my house has already descended into a post-apocalyptic hellhole where all rules for organization, hygiene, diet, schedule, and law and order seem a distant memory. I shudder to think what the second snow day tomorrow will bring. If you don't hear from me tomorrow, come check on us. We will be drowning in empty Doritos bags, naked and screaming like banshees who have lost all ability to communicate in words.
Beautiful. Lovely. Perfect.
And the first response from somebody was, sounds like my kind of party.
well, you know, the weather down here is not that that dire. We've got a, the temperature has dropped down to, I think it's 60 right now, if I'm honest.
It's just chillingly cold there.
Well, I mean, I wasn't here the weekend, and I was told that, well, actually, the day that we left, it had dipped in the morning. I got to the car, and it was like 45, all right? So, that was quite cold for us, okay? I gotta be honest, I was freezing. I mean, that day I was really, but I got back on Monday, and, I mean, it was 78, so, it's like, but today, it's, they're promising that it's gonna get quite cold to the next couple of days, so... You know, apparently with this, what do they call it, the polar vortex or whatever
thing now?
Is that part of the polar vortex?
I think it is part of the polar vortex. I can't, and he's on top of me now. Alex? Here comes the sister to save me. Bye, Alex.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good idea.
It doesn't even latch. This door, like, it's one of these... It supposedly has, like, a little latch or whatever.
You could get it fixed.
Yeah, I could. Or I'm sure,
like that frickin' fucking smoke detector I keep hearing for the last 2 years.
So the battery's still good.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, yes. It's still good because it's still beeping. God's sakes.
But yeah, I'm sure I could fiddle with it and fix it and make it so that it latched again.
But that would not be you. Yeah,
or I could just put a padlock on it, you know.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, that's kind of like...
I have occasionally when I've really wanted, like...
You know, you mentioned a padlock. It reminds me of Chad's Hampshire Hall apartment. Remember, you don't remember this?
Yes, I remember. A friend of ours had an apartment where he got locked into the apartment for several days at one point.
No, but that wasn't the bad thing. The bad thing was that he stayed in the building after we left, and there was a fire in the building.
Yes,
and the fire department went and knocked every...
All the doors, yes.
Yeah. All the doors in order to check to see whether anybody was stuck in there. And then the management was so good that they decided they weren't going to really fix the doors. They actually just put...
padlocks. Yes. Yes, I do remember that. I also remember a situation where he was locked in there for about 3 days. Because whatever, the door malfunctioned, I don't know. But no, what the technique I have used sometimes in this room is I have sometimes barricaded the door by moving a bookshelf in front of it.
Ah, there you go.
I
actually have a lock and it works.
Yeah. Anyway, I was going to say something about the weather and Pacific Northwest being mild too, but obviously not like Florida, but it's not like the East Coast either. But, you know, I think it's time to actually start talking about what we're going to talk about.
Yes, absolutely. Let's get to that.
So we've got depending on how you count, three or four things to talk about today. One and two are Obama came out with his NSA reforms since we last spoke, there've been a whole bunch of things. Basically, it seems like the last week has been a concerted effort to do various character assassination smears against Edward Snowden, which I found interesting in a variety of different venues in a variety of different ways.
Which we'll get to talk about that.
And then we just want to talk about some media realignment stuff because there have been a lot of trends in the last year, and a couple of changes that happened in the last 24 hours before recording this highlighted them, about just how major media properties interact with sort of their big stars and what people can do independently and all kinds of stuff like that. So we were going to talk about that a little bit. And then finally, Yvonne got a chance to use one of those, not just an Android phone, but one of those really cheap Android phone, blah, 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 really cheap Android phones,
Android phones, yes,
Android phones that are responsible in large part for Android's big numbers of units sold. So that's the basic agenda. Where do you want to jump in, Yvonne? Where do you want to go first?
You know what? Let's talk about the phone first, because I don't think I'm going to talk about it that long. Okay. So it was just one of those things where I went, my wife's family's from Colombia, so we went this weekend. We had a wedding there, and she's staying over there for a week, and the house is a little bit empty, to be honest with you. I'm kind of like a little bit of cabin fever. I came back yesterday because I had a lot of work, and
So thus the ads on Facebook about Russian wives.
Yes, exactly. Of course, that's why I've been like reviewing that.
Knows you perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. So knows that I'm doing more research, and so. One of the things, I went and I was sitting at a table and a couple of people, we had a group of people that actually, almost everybody had an iPhone, okay, all right, well, because we were people that, had more money, okay, that's a reality, it's a higher income, but there was one person...
You're not implying that most people in Colombia have iPhones.
No, they don't, no, okay. not by a long shot. But there was one of our relatives that makes more modest income. They had one of these like cheap Android phones that are the ones that are taking over the share. It's really, she used to have a BlackBerry, okay, and she replaced it with this, right? Okay, and years ago you and I talked about this, that we were talking about how the BlackBerry really was replacing for a while the cheaper feature phones, because people got that instead of an iPhone, instead of a more full featured smartphone, it had email, it had this, it had that. So Android has really taken over this. I mean, for multiple reasons. I mean, multiple vendors can manufacture it. The OS is free. You go in. So I grabbed... I don't think you have yourself, Sam, but I never used one of these phones. So I said, let me take a look at that damn phone. She was looking at my iPhone 5S like it was the light. I mean, she was like dying to get one. Okay, all right. So anyway, so I go and I grab it. First thing that jumps out at me. Number one, this phone actually had a keyboard. Right. Okay. And you're wondering, well, why would the phone have a keyboard?
And not all of the cheap ones do.
Not all of the cheap ones do, but the really, really cheap ones do. And I realized why, because the screen is such a low resolution screen. The screen was, I will say, about the same quality as the one I had on my Motorola Razr.
And touch screens are more expensive than non-touch screens.
Exactly.
Well. So if you're cutting every penny,
it was a touch screen. Okay. Oh, okay, but it still had a keyboard, but the resolution is so low. and the screen size was so small, okay? When you combine a bad resolution with that, you try to put a tap keyboard on such a bad resolution small screen, that's not going to really work. So they actually had a physical keyboard on it. And, I mean, it's just, you could tell, it's just, you know, the feel of it. I mean, it's just an incredibly cheap phone. I mean, you could just, from grabbing it. But the biggest thing that just stood out was it had an incredibly bad screen. She told me that she barely even took pictures. I asked her, "You got any pictures to show?" "No." "Why?" I don't like taking pictures with it because the camera is also off. Okay, so it had a really bad camera, really low resolution, really low resolution screen. When you looked at the apps that she had installed, there were so few apps, and the main reason is the phone is so slow, such a piece of crap. It really won't load more than just putting in a WhatsApp, a Facebook app, a couple of things like that. Everything else, it just wouldn't run on it, okay? And it's just that, I mean, I see that, and I saw that there were a lot of people with those phones. And that's what I keep talking about. But here's the thing about it. That phone, and it was a Samsung phone, by the way. That phone engendered zero loyalty in this person. Right. I put my iPhone in front of her, and she was like, "Look, she would have bought, if she could afford it, she would have bought it in a heartbeat." Okay, all right. And she was like, spent the whole time just playing with my phone. Okay, all right. And so it's just this one thing for people to come to perspective. Every time they look at these units, oh my God, they're selling all these units. It's all they've done is replace the crap phones that Nokia used to sell, that they had this huge market share, and that Research in Motion used to sell, because they're done, okay? They're out of business, I mean, for the most part. That's all it is, and they have not, they don't engender any brand loyalty, or do they make, then it goes back to, why does everybody look at these web usage metrics, and why the hell are the ones for the iPhone, like, still, you look at web usage, and it's like iOS devices outdo the Android devices? Guess what? She had a very limited data plan, too, by the way, all right? Right. There was just, okay, the phone, you really didn't want to do that much browsing with it. You did want to do some basic things. You don't want to be on it all the time, and oh, by the way, you have a limited data plan while you're at it. So it's just... And my whole point about it is just keep it into perspective. It's like every time they keep talking about numbers, really, I mean, these people are buying the phones because they're super cheap. It's not causing people to be like, oh my God, the next phone I want is a Samsung. As a matter of fact, what I noticed is like, no. It's like, I saw that it just made people think, it's like, this is what a Samsung is? This piece of shit? Really? I mean, this is what I can afford, but if I could afford more, I wouldn't buy this. It's what I saw from the behavior. So that was just kind of interesting to get my hands on one of those phones.
It'd be interesting to see comparison numbers that, because they're never presented this way. I'm sure you could possibly find this, but rather than comparing all Android to iPhone, where you actually break it down by like, not even individual models, but high-end phones,
mid-tier phones, cheap phones. I agree. And obviously, for obvious reasons, most of the manufacturers are avoiding that. They don't want to reveal that because it really tips their hand. It's obviously much better marketing to talk about that. But you could just look at the numbers. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you can see the revenue that Apple generates versus the revenue that Samsung generates. Apple's just as big as Samsung. And you got to remember that Samsung has quite a lot more product lines than just phones and computers. I mean, they make, you know, like, I think you bought a Samsung refrigerator, too.
I did, yes.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, they make refrigerators, they make air conditioners, they make all these industrial products. I mean, you can't, you know, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison when you, pardon the pun, but when you look at it. I just thought it was just quite, at least I finally got my hands on one of those phones, and I can understand.
Now, look, it's a market
that needs to be served.
Have you played with high-end Android phones as well?
Yes, I have. Those are a lot nicer, okay, all right? I mean, I did. I mean, but like I said about, you know, the one thing about Android, I have a couple of people in my office with those. And look, like, for example, one thing is, like, I got this guy that's got one of those Galaxy, the bigger ones. I mean,
What would you make fun of because it's huge?
Well, one thing is huge, number one, okay, which the one thing I keep saying is, but the one thing about it that I don't really feel like it's like that high quality of product, number one. I don't particularly care for a lot of customization and a whole bunch of the other stuff that they add to the phone. I don't like the ecosystem itself. It's just, you know, look, is it a good phone? Yes, it's a good phone. Do some people, I've got somebody at the office that owns a couple of Android phones. He likes to tweak, customize, and use every new app, every new thing, and likes to like put everything that, you know, that I would never install on the phone, because most of the stuff is like untested trialware that I would never want on the phone because I know it's going to crash and cost shit. I'm like, you know what? No. I want something that works, okay? And I want something that does what I want it to do the way I want it to do, that's predictable. I'm done with that. I don't...
Yeah,
and Open it!
What do you want me to open? Amy's coming in.
That
doesn't open. It doesn't open.
Open it like this. Open.
Okay.
Like that.
Here, open. Okay. Amy's taking you again.
But
bye.
Remember what I said about coming upstairs? I said you had to be quiet.
I was this.
No, you're kicking over Dad's metaphorical trains.
No, it's low.
Bye.
Bye.
Where was I? Anyway, phones.
Yeah, I mean, it's just my whole thing. I mean, I think that, you know, Samsung makes a great product. I know that, you know, it actually, I'm not going to say that it's a great product. Look, there's a combination of the Google software and Samsung that is compelling for a certain group of people that want certain things. I'm not that group of people.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that too. I think it reminded me. We've talked about this before. Back in the day, you know, I was one of those people who would try beta everything. And
me too.
I'd try out this and try out that, and I'd be downloading the newest, coolest software every day. And, you know, and I would play with new things, and I'd push things to the limit, and I'd customize this, and I'd customize that, and I would, you know, install stuff to, you know, change the toolbars and menus to look different, and I'd do this,
right,
and I'd do that, and I'd have extra software running in the background to do all kinds of other nifty things. And
I downloaded from an FTP server, like a beta version of System 7 for the Mac, and I installed it on my computer before it was final, for example. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I guess I had fun doing that kind of stuff, but at a certain point, I was like, you know,
they crash, they make problems, I'd have to uninstall them, it was like driving me crazy, and that's one thing, and at one point I said, the hell with this, unless I get the fucking final version, I'm not installing any of
this. Yeah, so I don't install beta stuff anymore. I still go trolling the App Store to download new stuff, but it's all fairly vetted, and I like that. I like that I don't have to worry about some random thing that I download, you know, trashing my phone. It's just not going to happen. On my computer, I do have all kinds of random crap running in the background, but it's all stuff that I very carefully decided to do. Half of it's stuff I built, set up myself, you know, and so, I make that trade-off, but I'm not going and downloading random shareware anymore. I default very highly to, like, if I just downloaded something today that wasn't from the Mac App Store because it was I couldn't find it on the Mac App Store. But my first choice is always going to be, can I get it from the App Store? Because it just makes everything so much easier.
Well, and I agree. I mean, that's the biggest thing about it, getting anything from there and installing it, and the fact that it's just consistent. So anyway, it's just one of those things where that some people like that stuff. I'm out of that business. I'm done. I'm out. I want something that works. I want to make sure that what I get has been vetted and other stuff. And let me tell you something. This other week, this last couple of weeks, I encountered multiple people that had these issues with, oh my gosh, with socially engineered viruses and other stuff. It just made me realize, I'm like, Jesus. I mean, for real, I mean, this is, I don't want to deal with that shit. Period. And that's why I have the platform I have. That's why I use it. There's other people that have different needs, different wants, and I'm okay. I'm just, I'm just one of those, and like I said, you know what? I want something that I have. My mom had a Samsung phone before. She could barely use it. She couldn't install anything on it. I replaced it with an iPhone. You know what? Now she'll download apps. I mean, that's just it. I mean, what else can I say? I mean, she can use this when she couldn't use the damn Samsung phone.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
Okay, with that, let's take a break. We'll come back and maybe we'll do media realignment stuff next. Back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, Alex, open. Now go back with your sister again. Go back.
That sounds like Amy.
Yeah, it probably is Amy.
Seriously?
And we're back.
We're back.
So, before we start on media alignment, I just wanted to mention, you know, because I didn't up front, a few things we're not talking about today. We're not going to talk about Iran and Syria. We're not going to talk about the Chris Christie stuff, even though more has happened on that in the last week. Nothing really big, but more side things.
It's just that but like I've said about the Chris Christie, he's too early.
It's too early. Although he did say that he's he was planning on sort of doing a bunch of pre-presidential stuff this year, and he said he's putting it on hold for a year.
To
see how things
fine.
Shake
it's,
out.
That's just the thing.
Early anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I've seen other people comment on how sort of establishment Republicans are freaking out a little bit because they viewed Christie as their best hope of not only winning the nomination, but winning the presidency, because they look at the rest of the Republican field and are like, none of these yahoos can win against Hillary Clinton.
Well, but you know what? That always looks like that at the beginning. I mean, let's see who the heck, you know, what happens. I mean, I think that it's let's face it, it's going to be a very difficult slog for whoever.
Well, and let's not forget that, of course, after I said we weren't going to talk about this, let's not forget that Hillary has her own huge sets of downsides, too, that have been sort of in hibernation during her Secretary of State tenure, because she came out, aside from Benghazi, which people are trying to pin on her, she had a fairly good tenure as Secretary of State, but she's got this whole history. And you can bet every single last bit of it will be dredged up again.
Agreed, and who knows what other candidates are going to pop up that maybe, you know, somebody latches on. I mean, we've had these other times where everybody thinks this is going to be the candidate, fait accompli, and, you know, then it turns out not to be.
And, of course, we're specifically talking, everybody thought that about Hillary.
That's right.
5 years ago. Yep. So, anyway, we're not going to talk about Christie. There have been various Obamacare updates and people saying, hey, it's going well now. Look at that. We're not going to really talk about that. Warren Buffett announced a $1 billion contest to get the NCAA tournament bracket correct.
I never do a bracket. I got to tell you something. Now that I know about that, I'm going to do one this year.
And, of course, people have done a number of calculations on what the odds are. Not just, you know, there's a certain set of odds
if it's
random. But even if you allow for people knowing about basketball and knowing, which, of course, I don't, and knowing that, like, higher-ranked teams are more likely to win than lower-ranked teams and all that, even if you add all of that stuff in, the odds are significantly less than any lottery out there.
It's definitely. I mean, it's definitely a lot better odds than the lottery.
Worse odds.
I mean, you'd be worse.
Yes,
they
worse.
Are.
Your chance worse. Of winning the lottery is better than your chance of getting a completely.
Well, that's
tripped.
Right, because it's not picking the winners. It's a perfect bracket.
Yes.
Holy smokes! Yeah, shit.
It's not just who wins or who's the top.
No. Yeah, it's a perfect bracket. Damn. Yeah. Yeah. That. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That would be. Yeah. Yeah. That would be.
Anyway, that'll be fun. You know, and I don't know. There's apparently a maximum number of people that can enter. I haven't heard if there's an entry fee or anything yet, but or whether it's just first million to submit.
What the hell, man? Whatever. I mean, you know, for a chance to win a billion, I mean, come on. I'll pitch in. What the hell?
I'll do my usual. My limit on such things is $20.
Yeah, deal. Okay, maybe, you know, there you go.
Anyway, we're also not going to talk about the Google buses in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And then two things that Yvonne and I did not discuss in the pre-show, which I realized we probably should have. There's been a little mini scandal around Wendy Davis and whether or not her stated life story history is exactly 100% correct. And the former governor of Virginia and his wife just got indicted for taking gifts.
Oh, yeah, stuff. I saw that, but I was like, whatever. Fuck, I was like, what the hell?
Anyway. Media realignment. So here's the immediate thing that happened today. Ezra Klein is somebody who's run a section of the Washington Post called Wonk Blog for the last few years, and frankly, I tweeted this, like 90% plus of the stuff I read on the Washington Post has been Wonk Blog recently. Like,
wow. Okay.
You know, cause you know, I don't do a systematic, like I read the Washington Post or I read the New York Times or I read this or I read that. I have, you know, I follow, almost 1,000 people on Twitter. It's 800 and something at the moment, I think. And I subscribe to something, a similar number of RSS feeds for various news feeds. There's no way I keep up with it all, but I use both those sources to you know, have both directly, like the journalists and bloggers and stuff that I follow, but also people who just point to interesting things a lot. And that's where I get most of the stuff. And so I follow the various Wonk Blog people on Twitter, and when they post stuff, I look at it. And sure, if one of my sources posts to an interesting news article on the Washington Post, I'll read it. But frankly, like, it's very fungible. Like, if there's a news story of the day that it's relatively rare. It does happen, but it's relatively rare when one source has a monopoly on it, where it's like the Washington Post is breaking this story and nobody else has it. For the most part, like if it's, you know, what happened in Iran today, I can get that same news from any of a dozen different sources. And so whichever one hits my feed first is the one I read. But, you know, stuff like the Wonk Blog I don't know how much you've read it, Yvonne, but it is a policy-focused, analytical focus. So they would look at various policy proposals, whether it be Obamacare or something about the environment or some proposed gun control thing or whatever, and they would do an analysis of it, you know, based on facts and figures and graphs and charts and things like that. And they do come at it from a perspective. They've got sort of a liberalish bent, but it was very good analysis type stuff. And wonky stuff, thus the name. And so when they posted something very, almost exclusively, it's stuff where they were coming at something with a new spin, with new information that you weren't just going to find anywhere else. So it was worth reading and looking at. And, you know, it was Ezra and a few other people. And I'd read their stuff on a fairly regular basis. Anyway, apparently what happened here is his contract was up for renewal or whatever, and he basically pitched, or maybe his contract wasn't up, but he was pitching an idea that he wanted to go and build up a new semi-independent website that would be adjunct to the Washington Post to really concentrate on all this stuff and beef it up even further than it has been. And he was pitching for a $10 million budget to get this thing off the ground. And the Washington Post basically said, we're not going to do that. And so he's like, okay, I'll go do it on my own. and he and a couple other people left and are going to spin up some new venture. And, you know, we'll probably hear more about that in a few months or whatever. And the thing that's interesting here is that there is a whole... This is not the first one of these.
Well, let me tell you about the other people, and I was mentioning this for example.
Yeah, it is a nice list. Go ahead.
Walt Mossberg left the Wall Street Journal. Had been there for over a dozen years to basically do the same thing. He started his own website called Recode. I got to be honest, I haven't read it.
It's Wasberg and Swisher.
They both of them left and they started their own one. David Pogue left the New York Times.
To go to Yahoo.
Okay, all right. Yeah, they backed him on a venture for a Yahoo Tech. Okay, he did that. It's just, those are a couple, I mean...
Here are a couple more, and I'm just, a nice list was on the Poynter website. The article was, Washington Post announces Ezra Klein is leaving. It's P-O-Y-N-T-E-R, P-O-Y-N-T-E-R is the website. Article by Andrew Bujan, B-E-A-U-J-O-N. Anyway, he put together a nice list of these. We got Nate Silver leaving the New York
Times.
And by the way, this is one of those things where this is a common theme on a lot of these. Nate Silver was independent, and then he got bought out by the New York Times. And although I should put quotes around bought out, he was very careful about it. He retains his brand. Like 538 was his. New York Times got to pay him to write 538 for them, but when he left, he took 538 with him.
Correct.
He left the New York Times to go to ESPN. Glenn Greenwald, who we've talked a lot about with the Snowden stuff, left the Guardian. And he was also someone who was independent first, then at Salon, then at the Guardian, and now he's going off and he's doing something with Pierre Omidyar. Who's starting his own new media news venture. We had, this one I hadn't heard about, Nitzan Zimmerman from Gawker will be an editor-in-chief of a new startup. There's Gabrielle Snyder, who is editor-in-chief of The Wire, also one I didn't really know about, moving independently. You mentioned Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg.
Yeah.
Andrew Sullivan is another big guy.
Correct. Yeah.
He was also started out independent. Went through a series of different major media. He was the Atlantic was two ago, and then he went to the Daily Beast, and then he now he's independent, and he's doing a completely independent model where he and a few staffers went there and said, we're going to live off your subscription revenue alone. Minimum, you can get almost all things for free, but beyond, he has one of those leaky paywalls. Beyond that, pay us minimum $20 a year, pay more if you want to. And he made just under $900,000 in the first year, which is enough to keep him going. And he's been very transparent. Every couple months, he posts updates on how many subscribers they have and all that kind of stuff. And also, someone mentioned Politico itself. Politico is another politics-heavy website that is now sort of the go-to place for inside the Beltway politics stuff, was founded by a couple ex-Washington Post people who also pitched something to the Post a number of years ago that said they wanted to do this, and the Washington Post said no, and they went off and started their own. And this is... I think we're just going to see this trend continuing. And it reminds me of a conversation, I should say, and I wish I'd brought this up beforehand, my stepmother's father was a journalist. He was an editor at a paper in Connecticut for many, many years. He's retired now in his 80s. But I think he's in his 80s. He mentioned that we had some conversation a number of months ago via email, and one of the things I said is, you know, I barely pay attention anymore to what public, you know, what the masthead is. Is it the New York Times? Is it the Washington Post? Is it the Atlantic? Is it CNN? Whatever. I barely pay attention to that. Most of the time, what I'm paying attention to is the name of the person who actually wrote the article. Now, there is a difference there. Like, most of the people we just talked about are what are columnists. they're not hard news reporters. They're not,
right, correct.
And because what you'll find is if you look, you know, now there's a lot of overlap here. Like, you know, you do get some of these folks breaking news. I mean, clearly Glenn Greenwald was breaking news and acting as a reporter. But, you know, they come to it from a columnist point of view. They have an opinion. They're pushing the things.
Right.
A lot of the folks, when you have sort of straight up news from, like, what happened in Afghanistan today, when I see those articles, I'd say 90% of the time I don't recognize the name. But when I do recognize the name, and it's like somebody I've seen multiple times before, and some of that I've had other people recommending, hey, this guy does good work, they've got good stuff, I pay more attention to it. I very rarely these days am like, oh, I can trust this article because it came from the New York Times. I want to know, do I recognize the name of the actual writer, and have good people said things about them? People I trust have said good things about them. Now, my relative's counterpoint to this is, well, you know, that's all well and good in some cases, but the New York Times name does tell you something. Like, if you're getting that report from some random part of the world.
Yeah, I know. I get that.
You know, it gives they've got, like, editors and standards.
I get it, but
of course, they fund the things. Like, if everybody was independent, who the hell would do the reporting?
Yeah, but here's a problem with that big media model, okay? All right? Especially, like, I came to the realization this week, okay? Because originally, I had signed up. I think I can't remember when I did, but it was like it wasn't that long ago that I said that I signed up again when the New York Times put up the paywall. At some point, I decided to start paying. Okay, all right, and there was a discounted rate for a while, so it went to the higher rate. Okay, all right. Well, I went the other day and I looked at my credit card statement and I saw how much I got charged for 1 year of subscribing to New York Times. How much do you think it was?
Oh, a few hundred dollars.
What do you? No, okay. How much? How many hundreds?
Let's call it $450.
You're short.
Okay. $600?
You're still short. It was over $700.
For a year of New York Times.
Yeah, and I went, I called them up, I canceled. I said, no fucking way. $700? Seriously? I mean, I'm sorry, but I said this when the New York Times originally put the pay model.
By the way, someone pointed out the other day on Twitter that the New York Times actually costs more if you choose explicitly to only get the paper copy and not online access.
Yeah. But the bottom line is $700. Listen, no. I'm sorry. I can't. You know what?
Sorry, just to be clear on what I said, it's not cost more for a paper copy than the online copy. It costs more for just the paper copy than it does for the paper copy and the online copy.
I get that.
Anyway, so
but here's the bottom line.
Here's the thing.
I pay $200 a month. So I pay for DirecTV.
Yep.
Okay. So $2,400 a year. Now with DirecTV, I get how much content? I get hundreds of channels. I get sports. I get this. I get that, or whatever. Okay, I get that. I'm paying for one source. One. $700? I said no fucking way.
Well, and here's what I've found, of course, with
it's a source that also has advertising.
Right, right. And
it's not just they got my subscription revenue plus the clicks.
Well, that's one thing that I get really pissed. If I pay for something and they put ads on.
I got fucking all those ads?
To me, it's like an either or. You put ads in there and give it to me free, or you let me pay for it and don't you dare put a damn ad in there.
I mean, I'm sorry.
Now, I understand the ads result in a lower price than you would if there were no ads, but at least
But it isn't on that. I'm sorry. Yeah. It just is not. I mean,
And here's what I look at on the New York Times. I mean, you know, like I said, I don't read any of these sources cover to cover, but, you know, hey, I read New York Times articles on a fairly regular basis because people point me at the New York Times article as the sort of, hey, here's what's going on, go read this. You know, I very rarely have actually hit their paywall. Like, you know, and I guess I'm not that intense of a reader, or I would, but when I have gotten close, whenever I've gotten to the point where it says, you've reached your article quota, you know, you have to subscribe to get more or anything like that. I'm like, oh, well, I won't read that article. I got plenty of other stuff to read. And this is, of course, what I just said is what's killing the model, is because there is so much alternative out there. And frankly, if it's an important New York Times article, there will be other sources out there who summarize it for me and give me the important bits.
I will tell you this. I considered it, but I did not cancel my Wall Street Journal one. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
you get more out of it.
I get a lot more out of it, number one. And the thing is, it's a lot cheaper.
Almost the whole thing is paywalled, too. So it's like, the New York Times, you cannot pay and get most of it. The Wall Street Journal,
it's paywalled, but it's cheaper.
You share stupid Wall Street Journal links on Facebook on a fairly regular basis, and every once in a while I'll click on one and I'll get the, you must be a subscriber to read this, and I'll be like, oh, screw that. I'm like, it sounded like it might be interesting, but screw that.
But here's the other thing, okay? It's a lot cheaper than the New York Times, okay? Right. All right? It didn't matter there was no fucking price at which the New York Times even came remotely close to what the pricing for the Wall Street Journal is. And which is the one irritating thing. The Wall Street Journal actually has a lot less ads than the fucking New York Times. So I'm like, okay, what the fuck? Okay? How does this work? Okay? I mean, I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal page right now. I see one ad, okay, all right? And I'm scrolling through the page. There's one ad on the fucking front page. One, okay? If I go to the fucking New York Times page, which I think I still, you know, my subscription ran until the 2nd of February.
You can get to the front page anyway.
There's one, there's two, there's three, there's four. I mean, I'm like, really? I just scrolled, and I'm four ads, and five, and I'm like, fuck, and wait a minute, I'm paying how much more money? What the fuck?
And see, here's the thing. The question is, what new model is going to shake out of all of this stuff? And I think you've started to see in the last couple years how this does pan out. Because what you're seeing is smaller, vertically oriented, personality-based organizations that have the audience are more niche often, or they've got, you know, people with, you know, like, well, the Omidar thing has somebody with deep pockets backing it.
Well, I'll tell you something. Go back to what I said about DirecTV. I think the one thing is that somebody's got to crack the code, where somebody's got to come up with a model that I can go and fucking pay, you know, $50 a month, and I get access to 100 websites, okay, or something similar to that. Okay, I can't justify paying individually the kind of money that some of the individual sites are paying.
Well, and this is exactly my thought. Like, and the problem is, how do you get that? Like, I mean, essentially, you have that already. You pay your ISP for your internet service, but the problem is they don't kick back anything to the sources.
Well, right, exactly. Yeah,
and similarly, like I look at this and say I can't. I have paid Andrew Sullivan because I appreciate his content. I read it all the time. I would probably pay a few other individual sources if they asked for donations in that same way. And I've by the way, never hit Andrew Sullivan's paywall. I gave it to him freely, saying, you know, I support what you're doing. I like your content. I want to give you money. you know, but I have trouble thinking of very many sources that I would be willing to pay up front for. And by the way, when you are talking about them, you're talking about relatively small amounts of money. Andrew Sullivan's was $20 a year as his minimum, and I think I paid $30. And I see that order of magnitude is what I'm kind of willing to pay. I'm not willing to pay a dollar a day for most sources.
Yeah, dollar a day? Yeah, it gets
up there. Yeah. But you know, I look at you know, I have my RSS reader, which is now that Google Reader went under, is Feedly, and you know, Feedly launched a pro version that added like one or two minor features, but for $5 a month. I wasn't sure whether I would even use those features or not, but I'm like, I'll give you your $5 a month because I supported this endeavor. And I would feel better, like an aggregator like that, that let me read not just one source, but hundreds of sources that I pick right. and choose
you'd,
myself.
Exactly. You'd be paying for that.
I might.
Paying one individual source, yeah, like a bunch of money.
I probably would pay a dollar a day for a Feedly or an aggregator like that. At this point, I would pay a dollar a day for Twitter. If they start polluting it with advertising, I would feel completely different, which Twitter is doing, by the way.
Which they are. Jesus, it's getting really irritating.
I actually haven't seen them, but
I have.
Well, and you know, maybe
and they're quite. And they're quite irritating.
Maybe this is one of the advantages of not using the official client. Although I think they're required to show.
Yeah. Well, by the way, how long do you think that's gonna? I think the
non-official clients are required to show the certain things as well. But in any case, you know, I would be willing to pay for an ad-free version of Twitter. I would be willing to pay for a good RSS aggregator. I would be willing to pay for other aggregation sites that you know, give me good stuff I like from all over, you know? I'm not willing to pay, you know, what, $700 and some a year for the New York Times? No.
No, it's just outrageous. I was going through my budget for the year, which is what I've been doing, which is why I got to that, and I was looking at what my top, like, expenses were, and I got to that. I said, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, no. Not doing it.
Well, and so let's get back to the article, not the article, but the what happens, like if the big media organizations like the New York Times can't, I've always said, I think the big guys, like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, will be able to figure out a way to make this work. They probably have to be a lot smaller than they have been. But you know, your local town paper is probably not going to make it.
Here's the thing. I mean, but I still see a lot of them surviving. Can I be honest? Okay, I'm looking at, like, one of the sites that I read regularly is the Miami Herald, a local paper down here. Okay.
Okay, so I'm not talking about major city papers. I think like, you know, Miami, Chicago, L.A., Seattle, they probably can support a paper, probably leaner than it has been. But you're not going to see, you know, you're going to have a hard time supporting things.
The old model. It's got, you know, listen, everybody wants local news, okay?
Yes.
Let me take out everybody, not you. A lot of people want local news, okay? And I think that it's just the model's got to change. But I think that, you know what, an advertiser-supported model online, I think that web ads will get a lot more money, as paper circulation goes down, okay, and they'll get more creative with them because they have to. Because there's a couple of things that I still don't see replicated online that you get on a paper. Like Shoppers, Specials, sometimes you get these people to put these inserts, coupons. Those are things that a lot of people use.
Yeah,
they still use them today.
That's true. I think a lot of the key to this, though, is, you know, very small, nimble organizations with not all that many people, using lots of freelancers, using lots of independent content, acting a lot as an aggregator, like I said, so that you're you know, and local papers always did this. They carried stuff from the AP or the New York Times.
Yeah, they do.
But
I'll tell you, I'm looking at the Herald today. By the way, at the bottom of the first page, for example, the flyers that they have for Dollar General, Target, Big Lots, all, you know, the usual ones that a lot of people grab, they actually have them there available for you to grab, because a lot of people use those, okay? They use the coupons. They want those, okay? Now, I don't think this is probably the best way to put them in there, but they're trying to figure out a way to give people, listen, you're not going to pick up the paper on paper? Fine. We need to give you that stuff that you got before somehow, because a lot of people still want it.
So, I mean, and one of the questions people ask all the time is, if you have this this kind of model where no one wants to pay for their content, and everything's free or advertising supported only. You know, who's going to pay for, you know, the armies of reporters to really dig into things, or to send out foreign reporters?
You got to be popular enough to be able to charge enough for the ads. It's as simple as that. Or, like I said before, you got to come up with some kind of subscription model. But it's not this individual subscription model. That was just crazy. I mean, because I'm sorry, $750. I got to look up how much. I mean, I used to subscribe to the New York Times for delivery 20 years ago. There is no way that it cost me that much a year. There is not even remotely. I think it was like 10 or 20 bucks a month. I think it was like 10, 15. It's just some stupid amount. It was like $15 a month or something like that.
Inflation, Yvonne. Inflation. Yeah,
that's not that much inflation. This is not education. You know?
By the way, I do want to say that during this conversation, I went to the actual New York Times homepage for the first time in a long time. I like their redesign.
It does look very nice.
It's much better than whatever crap they had before, which was just a disaster. I have an ad blocker on it here, so I don't even see the ads. But
it's not a disaster, but it is much better than it used to be. But I'm sorry, I'm not going to pay that much fucking money for it. That's it. I'm done. I'm out.
Anyway, I think my summary statement is, I think this is a very dynamic, interesting time in how these things are going to evolve. Yeah, the old models don't work anymore, and they're going away. And, you know, like it or not, you're 15 years from now, you know, the physical paper is becoming an artifact of the past. You know, people read their news online. And 15 years from now, I'm sure you'll still have it, because there'll be some people who, you know, really want their physical paper still, but it'll be a very niche product to actually get, like, you know, printed out on newsprint and at your door. You know, it'll be like vinyl records today. But the new models are very, very exciting. There's lots of interesting stuff happening. There's lots of good content being put out there. There's lots of really good research being put out there and good reporting happening. So the people who are worried about, you know, hey, there's not going to be any good reporting because who's going to pay for it? There's lots of stuff out there. And, you know, there's lots of the on-the-fly stuff. Like, you know, there's a question of, you know, who's going to pay to send the reporters to all parts of the world? Well, guess what? There are people in all parts of the world reporting on themselves. And what you can get now that you never had before is ways to raise the visibility of those people so that they can be seen worldwide and read worldwide. And then, yes, there is the quality control question. You know, if some random person in a news hotspot of the day suddenly becomes hot, how do you know if they're any good? How do you know what's going on? Do you know that this person is trustworthy, or are they just making stuff up? Or who's paying them? Do they have an agenda? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I think this just calls for, these are all issues, I suppose, but all it means is that you have to be more sophisticated in your consumption of these sources. You know, you have to be thinking about that whenever you look at anything, and not just, you know, hey, I read it, so therefore it must be true, but you always keep in your mind, okay, who is this guy who's talking to me? What's their potential agenda? Do I know anything about it? Who else is vouching for them? Who else isn't vouching for them? And you make judgment calls based on that. And you, in order to get a good understanding of what's going on and make good use of these sources, you have to do some of that extra thought. And sure, lots of people aren't going to, but, you know, the vast majority of people, the only news they're going to read is whatever, you know, funky, you know, silly picture with a headline that people are sharing on Facebook that week. You know, so those people are hopeless anyway. But for the folks who actually care about it, there's more out there to get and find than ever before, and the resources are out there to evaluate stuff as well, to understand what's good and what's bad. You'll occasionally get snookered by something that sounds good but turns out not to be once you look deeper. It happens.
Okay, I just shared a tweet, by the way. So for those of you on Twitter,
who are watching like a few days later. So he tweeted it, by the way, January 22nd, 4:08 UTC, which is the 21st in the evening East Coast time.
Yeah, so it's basically just a link to this place. It's an older article of somebody posted a graph of like digital subscription prices. Okay, all right, just to show this chart. I don't know if you saw
my. I just clicked on it. So for those of you who don't look at Yvonne's Twitter, it's a website called theunderstatement.com. An article posted on March 21st, 2011 called Digital Subscription Prices Visualized, a.k.a. The New York Times is Delusional.
Right, which is why I canceled, which is why I subscribed, and now I have canceled my subscription. Because if you look at that chart, okay, it shows you how The New York Times is expecting people to pay 2.5 times what the Wall Street Journal charges for their digital subscription. Okay? They're insane. And I'm not doing it.
Well, and what these sites are counting on, which I think is ephemeral at best, is the notion that it's the New York Times. It's the paper of record. People are going to pay this who care and are going to, because they can't do without the New York Times. And they're absolutely right. There are people who care, but those numbers are small and getting smaller.
They're dwindling. I mean, I do care to a certain extent, not to that kind of a gouging. No.
Yeah, and I had no. You know, I had a conversation a number of years back with my father about, you know, he was whenever he travels, he makes a point of always making sure he gets a copy of the New York Times. So he'll get stressed if he doesn't get his physical copy of the New York Times, and he'll go out of his way to find some place where he can buy it. And luckily, it's a fairly widespread paper. You usually don't have to go too far to find
it. Right. Go to Starbucks or wherever.
Starbucks almost always has it.
Yeah.
But the thing was, and I'm like, oh, you've got your laptop. You've got internet. Why do you need the physical paper? Just go to the website. And, you know, he was very adamant about how important it was to, you know, see what, you know, not just, you know, skim through whatever or follow links or whatever, but see what was chosen on the front page by the editors of the New York Times that day. What did they consider important?
I do agree with what he says, that it's nice, but it's just, you know what? It's just cool. It's like a vinyl record, man.
I think you've mentioned too, it's a lot easier to just like skim the paper. With the paper copy, perhaps.
It is.
Although I will say with RSS feeds and stuff, you can skim the paper that way too effectively.
It's different.
I understand it's different, but like I skim all the time. I mean, I have so many feeds coming in. I'm glancing at headline. Oh, I want to read that one. Headline. I probably read one out of 50 things in my feed, if that. You know, but so skimming still happens. But I understand there are some advantages of the media, but there's so many disadvantages. I just can't imagine dealing with that. I know.
But you know, it's like like you said, it's going to be like vinyl records. It is going to be. I mean, if it's not like almost there, I mean,
I don't know anyone under 40 who actually buys a physical paper on a regular basis.
Exactly. Nobody that I know of either. So.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay.
All right. We milked that subject for
a
long
time. Let's take a break, and we will be back after this talking Snowden and NSA for a little while, but hopefully not too long because we're
not too long.
We're going on forever again. Okay. Back after this. And here we are. That was supposed to be the short subject. Short subject. My ass. There was a brief scare there when I could stop on our recording for the break. Oh, nice cough there.
I'm sorry.
You know, I'm reading this book right now that my mom gave me for Christmas or a birthday a number of years ago. It takes place during the Spanish flu of like 1917 or whenever it was that killed so many people. Mm-hmm. And so in this, like, you know, every couple pages, there's people getting sick and dying, you know, from the flu. And at least it seems that way. And everybody's all scared of the flu. And so now every time I cough or any time I hear somebody cough, I'm like, that's it. They're dead.
Well, no, I'm not dead. I've been coughing for a while. Okay, all right, and I'm not dead.
Anyway, I was just saying, when I hit stop, I had a scare for it, because it took a couple seconds before the file showed up here, and I'm like, uh-oh, did we actually not record that 30-minute segment?
Oh, God, that would have been a disaster.
But it's there. Anyway, what do you want to talk about first, the Snowden-specific stuff or the Obama-specific stuff?
Well, let's talk about the Snowden-specific stuff a little bit. And I guess that, you know, so there were a number of people, I guess, I mean, you posted this article. They were writing about...
So let me give you the article. Let me give the folks the article.
Mr. Minter, Mr. Abelsmay tweeted this thing.
So, this is an article by Sean Wilentz, Wilentz, in the New Republic, entitled, "Would You Feel Differently About Snowden, Greenwald, and Assange If You Knew What They Really Thought?" Published on January 19th.
And I guess the whole point of it is that, look, he basically draws a picture of these guys basically being assholes, which is fine.
Well, not just assholes. I would say it's not just about them being assholes.
Or hypocrites.
It was even more...
In a lot of things.
I think the critical point to me that I got out of this wasn't even that... It wasn't asshole, wasn't hypocrite. It was that these people are people coming from a viewpoint which is very much... I'll use the word it from the libertarian tradition of limited volume, very limited, constrained government that's basically against large scale interventions by governments of all sorts. I think the word was even used in one of the descriptions of this article as anarchists, which goes a step beyond libertarians, but basically of the idea that, you know, hey, nothing, you know, no surveillance is legitimate. What our goal here is not just to reveal things about abuses
but
by
they
the
also
NSA, they have a lot of social agenda, but basically saying that their agenda is not just, hey, we want to point out abuses and reform the system. It's more that
we
hate the system. It shouldn't exist at all. We're trying to undermine it in every way possible.
That's the one thing about it. It's like, look, and I said this before, but I think that even, like, it talked more about their personalities, about how they were looking for certain attention. It talked about how they were drawing to themselves, which is my point that I was talking about when originally, one of the reasons why I ripped Snowden, it had nothing to do with the content. I just, like I said, and I said this, and a lot of the stuff in their article validated that, you know what? The guy was just looking really to make himself be the hero of this fucking thing, okay? In certain things, from the article, and I, you know what? But the reality is that I gotta separate the person from the content, okay? Look, what he revealed is stuff that I've been against. It's one of the reasons I've been against the authority for surveillance for a long time. This whole process, how it existed, and what he revealed and validated it. The fact that the guy is somebody who I personally would not like to deal with is irrelevant, okay, to it, okay, for me. The revelations that he revealed are the revelations. That is a fact. The fact cannot be, twisted in my head just because the guy is an asshole, okay, all right, or a moron, or a combination of both, or an egotist, or whatever the fuck, because he got a good combination of a whole bunch of stuff in it.
And let me point out another thing that's happened this same week. On the Sunday shows this weekend, and actually there was an article by John Schindler, who goes by a 20 committee is his website. And let me just find this real quick. An article he posted on January 20th, How Snowden Empowered Russian Intelligence. And by the way, I should say, I'm gonna sort of be negative on John Schindler for the moment, but one thing he has provided consistently for those of us who are on the what the NSA has been doing is bad and we'd rather not them doing it and this is going overboard on national security, blah blah blah, he is one of the most articulate defenders of the other side. And so I recommend definitely people, it's 20committee.com. He's been in the intelligence community and he posts very good defenses of what's going on. But one of the things he's been doing, he's mentioned on a variety of occasions, is basically he thinks that this whole Snowden thing was really an operation run by the Russians, even from the very beginning. Not just once Snowden got to Russia, but like they were running him as like an agent. And he hasn't provided any evidence of that, but he sort of implied very heavily that a lot of things sort of point in that direction. And it's interesting, but okay. But a number of people went on the Sunday talk shows, like members of Congress and such, saying similar things this weekend, saying, I wouldn't be surprised if Snowden turned out to have had help from the Russians and various things like that. And then lots and lots of people repeated this article, repeated these statements saying, but without, there's no facts there. There's just people speculating. There's absolutely not one scintilla of evidence, at least publicly, which is all we can talk about right now, that Snowden, in fact, was not exactly what he said, an individual doing this because that's where his conscience told him to go. But yet, we had headlines all over the place in the first part of this week with people saying, is Snowden connected to Russia, blah, blah, blah.
That goes back to my point about...
It seems like this week, we had a lot of this initially, but suddenly this week, we get a whole bunch of this. It's like a concerted effort to, like, this is Slam Snowden week.
Well, but this is... But that was my point originally when I said that, if you want to be a good whistleblower, who the heck were the guys that 30, 40 years ago stole the papers from the FBI and published them and they didn't come public until recently? Okay, you don't want to be the fucking focus of it, because then they'll start scrutinizing you instead of what you revealed. If you believe that what you revealed stands on its own ground, then there is no reason why you need to be out there. And I've said this before, that there is no way that it would have been caught, because what we found out is that there were no controls. And he knew that, okay? That's the reason he was revealing a lot of this stuff. So we keep talking about him, like I've said before, it's been like 9 months, and you know what? If you saw the NSA reforms that President Obama revealed,
we'll talk about next,
they're fucking so superficial, it's not even funny, Congress is not going to fucking do anything, and the reality is that unfortunately, the American public and the American politically elected people, if you go through it, they think this is right. They do. And maybe you could have gone and, I think that the people that are taking the right approach are the people that are trying to go to courts and, like, trying to get this declared unconstitutional. I think that is the right approach. I think that if the revealing the abuses I think revealing the abuses is important, because I think people, that needs to be stopped. But
like you said, most people agree with it. Like, most people won't say what abuse. We haven't seen any abuse here whatsoever.
Right.
We've seen the government agencies doing their job.
Right.
The arguments of the folks who say, but they shouldn't be able to do that. But it's or whether or not they've quote unquote abused it so far means nothing, because once the power is in place, what about the next guy or the guy after that or the guy after that?
Right.
And those arguments just fall on deaf ears. If you've decided that it is a completely legitimate thing for the government to be doing all this stuff,
then all of that is just
noise. And I've talked, My daughter will sometimes be like, I don't understand all these people ranting on Facebook. What? They thought they had privacy?
Yeah.
You know, what? What are they surprised about? Of course
it's
like
this. If you want privacy, you know what? You can't say it. You certainly, I mean, maybe you can say it like, you know what? I will admit, I am very coy about sending anything in written form. If I want to inform somebody about something that I don't want at some point that message to come back at me, you know what? That's the reason why I use a damn phone and actually call and tell somebody that.
Well, guess what? That's all recorded anyway.
It may be recorded, but you know what? It's a less likelihood of that, you know what, of that and that being taken and forwarded, okay? I mean, believe me. I mean, and I'm talking about a conversation, not a voicemail. I actually had... A couple of years ago, I am on the condo board of my condo, and I have a guy who was trying to get elected to the board, who hated my guts, who left a very insulting and spiteful message. I mean, he basically ended it by saying that I should crawl up into a ball and die. And he left it in a voicemail, okay, all right? And I actually was able to download that message and send it to... most of the people who vote for the board, and he said a lot of the guy was Jewish, and he said quite a lot of anti-Semitic comments. Okay, our attorney, which is one of the bizarre things. My attorney happens to be Jewish. He's a very conservative Jewish person. He wears a yarmulke. He observes many customs, and he ripped into him and about his religious beliefs and other stuff on the voicemail. And you know, being in a community that is significantly Jewish here, I mean, all I had to do, I said, perfect, thank you very much for giving me what I needed. I just freaking took a copy of that voicemail and just distributed it out, and the guy got no votes. I mean, yeah, he got no votes, actually. He got, out of 200, he got 4.
But anyway, I look at the question, like you said, it chills public discussion, it chills private discussion.
Yes.
And I'm like, isn't that a problem? You know, but a lot of people are like, no. They're keeping us safe from the damn terrorists. That's all that matters. And of course, they're not even doing that, really. I mean, I think there's plenty of evidence that it's not super effective. Not even to mention, of course, though I'm about to, the argument that, you know, on the grand scale of problems that we have in the world or even in this country, terrorism is way, way, way down there.
But listen, say it's even effective. All right. Okay. The question isn't whether it's effective or not. The question is whether such a gross violation of most of our
that
rights
we shouldn't do it anyway.
Exactly. It justifies the minute increase in our safety. That's the real question, and that's the one thing that bothers me, because I don't think that Americans should be so willing to give up their rights for something that. It increases like your security by very, very, very little, if any at all.
So let's wrap up Snowden, and then we'll talk more about that on the Obama side of things. I just wanted to say one thing that's just I've noticed passing by on Twitter while we've been talking here. Snowden has now responded to the U.S. politicians who were saying that maybe he's a spy, etc.
Yeah, he said he denies it. Of course, I didn't expect. Well, I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh yes. Yeah, well, I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, of course he was going to deny it, even if he is a spy. But, you know, he says, it's not the smears that mystify me, it's that outlets report statements that the speakers admit themselves are sheer speculation. And that's part of, like, what bothers me about this, too, is, like, there's so many news articles saying so-and-so said that they thought maybe this would be true. Really? That's something to report on? Tell me if so-and-so says he has evidence about something. But if so-and-so is just saying... Hey, well, maybe he's a spy. That's not worth reporting on.
I guess it just depends on who says it, I guess. I mean, it's like, I'll give you an example of something innocuous. It was the comment that Obama made on marijuana, mm-hmm. and now it's getting a lot of play. I mean, if it was somebody else saying it, nobody cares, but because Obama said it, you know, it's getting tons of play. Right. So.
Well, and it is significant from a president saying that basically he doesn't believe many of the policies of his government are make sense. But and it's like, you know, you have the power to change that. But anyway,
not totally. He needs Congress.
No, not entirely. As an administrative action, marijuana could today be reclassified by the FDA, so it's not a Schedule 1.
That's true. The EA could reschedule it out of Schedule 1. That's true.
They could do that tomorrow.
That's true. I forgot about that. Yep. Okay.
No laws needed whatsoever. Because the laws just specify
Schedule 1 happens. Because it's Schedule 1, and it's an administrative piece. You're right. I you know, and I used to do those inventory schedules, so yeah, I know the drill. Okay, yeah.
I just wanted to do one thing, and I also retweeted this, so some of you may have seen this already. But in terms of Putin and Russia and Snowden and all this kind of stuff, best tweet recently from Gray Hoodie is his handle. He said, prediction for Sochi opening ceremony. Bare-chested Putin riding a Siberian tiger, leading a leather and zipper mask-clad Snowden on a leash.
Love it. That would be perfect.
Okay, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about Obama's grandiose reforms of the NSA. Back after this.
Not.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Not yet.
But you stopped talking to Yvonne.
I took a break. The podcast isn't actually over yet.
Okay.
One more segment. We're going to talk about one more set of things.
What about trains? What about diesel?
Trains and diesels aren't what we're going to talk about.
No, diesel trains.
I love diesel, by the way. Very
nice. Talk about those a little bit. Then when you are done, come downstairs and tell me you are done.
Okay, I'll come downstairs and tell you when I'm done.
Daddy, well, if you take a break, what about we play trains?
When I've got one more segment to do, and you know, maybe we'll mention diesel trains a little bit, but mainly we're going to be talking about Obama and the NSA. Do you know what Obama is?
What?
Obama's the president.
When you are done talking with trains, you will come down and tell me you are, and I will tell.
Yes.
Daddy's taking a break.
No, I'm trying to get started again. But yes, no. when I'm done talking about trains, no. I'll come get
Daddy,
you.
Daddy.
Yes.
Your break is not over.
It's not over?
Because you didn't.
Well, it's not over because you're.
Beep beep beep. So at that point, Alex knocked over the microphone. It hit the keyboard, and the recording stopped. And then later, I realized that the recording had stopped and thought I'd lost all of that you just heard. And so when I started up again, I lamented that I'd lost that a bit. But I got most of it. I lost about another 40 seconds or so. But you got the point, and so you'll understand all the rest of the context. And anyway, you know, most people would cut that stuff out. But, you know, I think it's cute. I like it. It's my podcast. It's my kid. So suck it up. Back to stuff. Doo doo doo. That didn't get recorded.
What? Which part?
The part with Alex. I try to record those, like,
Oh, well. Okay.
Because that was a good one. He was talking.
I know that was very good.
I'm upset. I don't know how it stopped. Maybe he stood on a keyboard or something. I don't know. But, like, I try it when he comes in and he's like, you know, well, hey, why don't you take a break and talk about trains? I try to get that.
Oh, that was beautiful. Oh, yeah. Damn it, you didn't record it. No shit. Oh, well.
Pointed at the plant.
All right, come on. Let's get this over with before he comes back. Come on.
Okay. And we're back. You guys missed a very good interlude with Alex, and I'm sorry I did not get most of it on tape. I apologize.
Oh, gosh. Anyway, yeah, well, he likes diesel.
He wants us to talk about diesel trains for our last segment.
Well, I don't like diesel trains. I like all things diesel. Okay, all right. I'm very disappointed. I tried to buy a diesel car. Okay, instead of the car, I wanted to buy a different car. It was the same car, but I couldn't get one with a diesel engine with some of the stuff I wanted. It was quite irritating. I would have really liked to have gotten that. Because they had a diesel car. It was such an ugly color. I was just like, okay, as much as I like the diesel, I just can't buy it this ugly. So anyway, all right. Well,
anyway, there we met our obligation. We talked about diesel trains.
I talked about diesel. Yes.
Anyway, Obama finally came out with his speech, where he was telling, you know, he had this committee that he set up to look at the NSA and make recommendations and blah, blah, blah. And then he thought about it for a month or so. And then this week was his speech where he was going to say what he was doing about those recommendations. The EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, on the day before the speech or so, came out with a scorecard that said, okay, here are the things we're looking for to determine, you know, is there real reform going on? And it was 12 points that they gave. And I predicted that there would be zero of these 12.
And how did they score?
Well, let me give the 12 first. And by the way, you can go to EFF. And look for Rating Obama's NSA Reform Plan, EFF Scorecard Explained. It'll show you the scorecard and the scores they gave him, which I'll talk about in a second. But it was posted on January 17th. But here are the 12 items. Number one, stop mass surveillance of digital communications. Number two, protect the privacy rights of foreigners. Number three, no data retention mandate. Number four, ban known review national security letters. Now, they actually gave him partial credit for some of the ones you've made the noise at. But number five, stop undermining internet security. Number six, oppose the FISA Amendments Act.
Gosh, I don't know what it's a story with that one.
Number seven, reject the third party doctrine. Make your noise. Okay, you're done with noises. No more noises.
I didn't know the answer to that one.
Okay. Number eight, provide public accounting for spying programs. Number nine, embrace meaningful transparency reform. Number 10, reform the FISA court. Number 11, protect national security whistleblowers. And number 12, give criminal defendants all surveillance evidence. Okay. So I predicted zero out of 12. EFF actually scored him better than that. Gave a final score of 3.5.
3.5? Wow.
And so here's where they gave those.
That's not that bad, I guess.
Three out of 12 is still very much a failing grade.
Given that we expected a zero.
Yeah, it's better than I expected. I must say that. It still really, really sucks, but it's better than I expected. So the ones they gave him partial credit on, they gave him a 0.2 on the stop mass surveillance of digital communications and communications records, because he did slightly constrict it.
We're not talking about trains.
We already did.
You missed us. We did talk
about trains. We did, actually.
We talked about trains for a little while.
Do it again.
Do it again?
Yes. Very quietly.
Talk about it very quietly.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to be very quiet about the trains.
Yes, very quiet about the trains. You know, Amtrak loses money.
Yes, they do.
There was a train derailment in Philadelphia this last week.
They had that picture of that thing with the oil tank.
Another one crashed to another bullet train.
A train crashed into a bullet train?
Another bullet train.
Yeah. A train crashed into a bullet train.
And it crashed to each other.
Yeah?
Yes.
Are you talking about the time in New Jersey where the two transit trains crashed into each other a few months ago?
The two bullet
trains. Oh, two bullet trains. I haven't heard about that one.
I just talked about that when we in your bedroom when we said another train crashed.
Oh, right.
And I said that, and I said a different train. And I talked about it, and you didn't hear me talk about it.
Okay. So, why are you shushing me?
Because you need to talk quiet.
Quiet like this.
Like this. This train's on the track.
Oh, like that. Oh, look, Mommy's here to take you again.
I want my flashlight.
All right, we gotta finish this up soon. It's almost midnight over here in the East Coast, for God's sakes.
Okay. Here we go. Okay, there you go, guy. We talked about trains twice now.
All right, twice.
Okay.
So, he got a 3.5 out of 12.
They got 3 out of... The other ones they got partial credit on were protect the privacy rights of foreigners, because they introduced, again, some additional restrictions, but with lots of caveats and lots of ways out. They got partial credit for ban no-review national security letters, because they limited the scope of them a little bit. They got full credit for opposing the FISA Amendments Act, because he said some things that go against what's in it, although he didn't explicitly say it. They gave him partial credit for provide a full public accounting of surveillance apparatus. And again, it's because he appointed a committee to talk about it every once in a while, but there's lots of holes in it, so partial credit only. Reform the FISA credit. Court. They did give him full credit for that one. I don't think he deserved full credit for it.
I don't think he did either. I mean,
they would have independent advocates now, but there were no details, and there's lots of room for, you know, getting around whatever.
Now, listen, I will say this, okay? If I go, look, I expected nothing to happen.
Yeah.
All right? Okay? He actually did a number of things that, given the fact that he's got, legally he didn't have to do probably
anything. Right.
Okay. And yet he did. So it's certainly some movement. Well, now, like I've said before, I would prefer that a lot of this stuff be repealed, and to be honest with you, like, I think the FISA court as it stands, I just don't like it. Okay?
Right. Now, here's another article. I mentioned John Schindler before giving the Snowden as a Russian agent theory, but there was an article that he posted on January 18th called The End of the Snowden Operation. And again, this is on 20committee.com. And I think this article, as much as I wish it wasn't true, is actually very much nails it in terms of absent, even if they're new revelations, the public for the most part has been like, oh yeah, okay, whatever, more NSA crap. I think opinions are set. people, and we talked about this on the prediction show, people's opinions are set. It's clear at this point the majority is just fine with this stuff.
Yeah.
And so basically he says that this is Obama putting the cap on this and saying, look, all this came out, almost all of this stuff I approve of. I think we need to do it. There have been no abuses. Maybe we need a little bit more transparency, or maybe a little bit more rules around it. And here's some fig leaf stuff that won't make any significant difference, but we'll get all you guys off my back because now I've done something. The fact that it won't actually stop the government from doing a damn thing that it does today, not one little bit, doesn't really matter. He's sort of said, okay, I've evaluated the situation. Here's what we're going to do. And he's going to do some very, very minor tweaks and adjustments that don't really make any difference. And the Congress, the way it's divided right now, certainly isn't going to do anything. And even if they did, he would veto it. But forget about the divided
Congress. It doesn't matter. Okay, say it's a Republican fully Congress. I mean, they wouldn't pass anything because a lot of Republican leadership is totally for the surveillance.
Well, as we saw in the House, there was just short of enough to do something in the House, but even if you did something in the House, you're not even close to a majority for any meaningful reforms in the Senate.
Exactly.
And even if you were, the president would veto it, and not just Obama. Whoever's after Obama is going to veto it too, because the fundamental dynamics of this is no president, with the possible exception if we ever elect some radical libertarian, which is unlikely, but who knows, maybe, with that possible exception, no president is going to sign a law that reduces their own power.
Highly unlikely, yes.
I mean, you'd in order to have that happen, you have to have a situation where the Congress is uppity enough to pass something over a presidential veto.
Right.
And we are a long, long way from that.
Yeah, we're not even remotely close.
And I think this is frankly, you know, I think this analysis, this is a very good article, by the way, The End of the Snowden Operation. I encourage you and folks to read it. I think it's unfortunate, but true. This is... You know, this is the last of the major things here. You know, absent something that blows everything we've heard so far out of the water, absent something like that, you know, we'll continue to get revelations, but nobody else is going to change their mind, and we'll just putter along, and this is it. At least for the short term. Like I've said, sometimes for things like this, it takes decades for attitudes to change. And so I'm not saying anything about where we might be in 2030, but for the next 4 years, I think the reforms that Obama announced are it, and we're not gonna, you know, we're not going any further. You know, again, absent some bombshell that's bigger than anything we've heard so far.
Yeah, well, I don't expect them. So, anyway, which is what I told our buddy Greenwald, who's all over me about it, but you know what? I mean, and like I said, I mean, the thing is that I don't agree with this position about getting it. It's just, like I said, American attitudes, they don't give a shit. So, there you have it.
Now, and as I said a few episodes ago, I think it was on the solo show, but you know, if you do see movement on this, I think with the place where we'll see movement is in entrepreneurs in the public sector working on newer technologies that are specifically designed to be defensive against this kind of thing.
Right.
And it'll take several years for those kinds of things to ramp up, but you may see, you know, in a few years, you may see a lot. There'll be a burgeoning of companies who are promoting products who has as their advertised advantage resistance to snooping. And you know, whether or not any one of those manages to make that a mass market success is a whole other question. But you'll certainly see those products for the, you know, that'll be available for the people who really are concerned about this kind of stuff, which, you know, obviously includes people like us, but you know, the prime audience for those things, unfortunately, is in fact going to be criminals and terrorists. That's just the way it goes. But ideally, those technologies would be adopted and used by everybody, and people would be concerned about this and care. But the reality is, I think we've proven time and time again, most people don't care. And again, it's not just the government. It's people freely giving up their information to all kinds of private sector entities in exchange for, you know, their free email service or their Facebook or their Twitter or whatever. You know, you give me free Facebook, you can learn everything about me, and I'm okay with that because I get Facebook.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's what a lot of people are willing to give up for what they want, I guess. But, you know, I think that, you know, like you said before, it's the whole thing about changes in generational, like you talked about the newspapers before. I think most of the people at that age, under 40, they don't give a shit. They just don't. So...
Yeah, I mean, for those kinds of things, certainly. I mean, they are growing up with the assumption that nothing is private except possibly things that happen behind closed doors with nobody having their phones or cameras out. But I think even those things, they acknowledge, well, yeah, people know about those too.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, all right,
okay,
we're done.
That's it.
We're out.
Thank you for joining us for yet another Curmudgeon's Corner that has gone on way too long. And we will, you know the usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com, follow me at abelsmay or Yvonne at imbo on Twitter, and have a nice week, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.